of Sweden's orderly image. But from me and my producer, Luke Mulhall, that is all for now. Goodbye.
Free Thinking was presented by Lawrence Scott. You're listening to After Dark here on BBC Radio 3, and ahead of us in around 20 minutes' time, Late Junction. Presenter Nick Luscombe's with me now, back in Poland again tonight, Nick, and with one of the original American minimalists.
Yeah, so we go back to Krakow and the Unsigned Festival, where we saw Terry Riley performing.
Terry Riley.
He performed in a salt mine. I think you might have mentioned this earlier, but it's quite an unusual setting. The first time he's played in the country, so we've got a recording of that performance, so we're going to play you some of that.
What kind of sounds can we expect from him? I mean, sort of different instruments?
He performs with his son, so it's a kind of a collaborative affair, and it's fascinating, really interesting, and it unfolded really beautifully. So
The location sounds fantastic too.
It's wonderful. And I was a bit apprehensive, to be honest, about going that far underground, but it really worked and it sounded great. So yeah, I think we've captured the atmosphere of the whole space really well.
Wonderful. Thank you, Nick. That's Late Junction here on Radio 3 at 11:05 tonight. First, though, the essay, another in our series Contagious Cities, marking 100 years since the outbreak of the Spanish flu pandemic. This evening, our disease expert is also our writer. Deborah Dinith is a Brazilian anthropologist and lawyer who's travelled extensively in northeast Brazil, meeting young women and their children suffering from the Zika virus. Following her campaign to introduce legal abortion in early pregnancy, she's had to leave Brazil to avoid mortal danger and has written and presented this essay in exile. Before she fled, Deborah Dinith travelled to the city of Maceió with two colleagues, and the sounds of her journey can be heard in the background.
I'm the only member of my family who has caught Zika. Every bone in my body ached, and my eyes turned bright red. I was covered all over in small itchy bumps. I don't know if I felt so much pain because my body isn't used to tropical diseases, or whether I was a statistical 1 in 4 who experiences the full range of symptoms. Some people have the disease with only a few of the symptoms. Some people don't even know they've had it. Both my parents are from Alagoas, in the northeast Brazil. My mother from Maceió, the capital, and my father from a town in the interior. 15 years ago, my parents retired and moved to a fishing village about 50 kilometers from Maceió. Finally, they could fulfill their dream of returning to their roots. The coast of Alagoas has long, lovely beaches, washed by warm green seas. It is a popular, picturesque tourist destination. It is also a portrait of Brazilian inequality. My family is middle class, rich even by the standards of a country divided into two groups, an immense majority living in poverty, and a small minority enjoying the good life. Once in the days of the sugar plantations, at the end of the 19th century, Alagoas, although small, was thriving. Now it has the lowest human development index in Brazil. It suffers from regular droughts. Public sanitation is inadequate to non-existent in many rural areas, and tropical diseases abound. In January 2015, the state's medical clinics were crowded with people complaining of what was at first called mild dengue. Alagoans were familiar with 80 bones of dengue, but this time the illness was different. Neither herbal teas nor drugstore remedies helped. In April 2015, a laboratory tucked away at the Federal University of Bahia announced that the virus afflicting thousands in Alagoas and other parts of northeast Brazil was Zika. And by October, hundreds of children were being born with tiny heads. There was talk of an epidemic of microcephaly. It was the first time there were any epidemiological reports of Zika circulating outside of Central Africa or Southeast Asia, and it was happening in my home state, in my city. In 2016, I decided to document women's experiences of Zika congenital syndrome. As well as a law professor, I'm an anthropologist. I wanted to know how everyday women had been living with Zika far away from the media spotlights. I set off on a journey around Alagoas, which over the last 2 years has taken me to places I'd never been before, and to people whose stories filled me with admiration and anger. I traveled with a medical doctor, a social worker, and a former student and lawyer, Gabriella, who is still visiting families in my absence.
Sometimes families know more than the physicians do, right?
I saw babies with small heads all across the state. And the 86 women I interviewed all had similar stories to tell. We made return visits to some of the families to see how they and their children were getting on. Sarah is referred to as Patient Zero in Maceió. Her parents are young. Her mother, Mabeli, is a pharmacy student. Her father, Bruno, works at a transport company. They live in Jacintinho, the state's largest favela. If you were a tourist arriving in Alagoas, you would pass quickly through it, on the way from the airport to the beaches of the coast. I'd never set foot in Jacintinho until then. It's a scary place. The local drug lord signed off on my request to visit.
So we ask it for a permission from the local gang leader. I know that it sounds like...
His rules were simple. We had to keep the car windows down and let one of his underlings accompany us. Sarah's family lived in one of the favela's ramshackle homes. Unlike some of their neighbors, they had electricity and were linked to the sewage system. Bright red curtains hung in the doorways of the two bedrooms. There was hardly any room for the pram where Sarah slept. A can of insect repellent stood next to the baby bottle on the kitchen table. The infant was frail and tiny, and I wondered how she would be able to survive a severe seizure in an environment like that. Mabeli noticed the symptoms of Zika during her pregnancy. Like me, her body was covered in an itchy rash, but her bones didn't ache. She had tests done soon after Sarah was born, but was never told the results. We go back to Jacintinho on a muggy day 2 years later when we finally reach Mabeli by phone. She explains they've moved out of Jacintinho and in with her parents-in-law, closer to the city center. When we arrive, Mabel is sitting next to her husband with Sarah in her lap. The front door of the house opens right onto the city's sidewalk with traffic roaring by. Sarah becomes agitated whenever an ambulance passes or a horn blows. When Mabeli and Bruno wanted to record their daughter's first seizures, they would wait for the noise of a siren and then turn the camera on so the neurologist could see what was happening. In the favela, they had to put up with gunfire and drug trafficking. Now it's the sounds of road traffic, almost roaring through the house, that triggered their daughter's seizures. For Mabeli, like other mothers of children with the disease, the informal sharing of information is crucial. Science can't give them the answers they want. On WhatsApp, illiterate mothers can record messages about their needs rather than having to write them.
The most difficult issue for them is to find time to get together.
Yes.
Because of that WhatsApp is so important.
Yes, because I imagine it's hard to get here.
And everyone can send photos and videos of their children to each other, and sometimes to healthcare providers before they go to their appointments. Women are able to interact as a community of peers and protect each other from a world where their special needs children suffer daily discrimination.
So, what is the name of your WhatsApp group? Qual é o nome do seu grupo de WhatsApp?
Família Jean.
Angel Families. Because it's the name of the group.
Mm-hmm. And it's the name of the association.
The group is organized by Alessandra, who set up an association of families whose children have Zika. Alessandra lost her son in a drug war just a few months after her grandson, Eric, was born with the syndrome. She lives near the airport, about 30 kilometers from the city center. The streets here are paved, and GPS navigation is feasible. But according to Maceió's public safety classification, the area is designated as red zone, meaning it's just as dangerous as Jacintinho.
We can see a lot of garbage here. I mean, the dumping ground is nearby, this area?
I think so. I have to ask. Ladson, o lixão da cidade era por aqui?
Não, antigamente o lixão.
Less than a kilometer from Alessandra's home, there's tons of garbage in the city landfill site, along with an unusually high concentration of mosquitoes.
Yeah. And now there are only two?
Yeah, only two more.
I contracted Zika because I left my privileged, healthy middle-class surroundings to spend time in places where women live at risk every day. For me at 46, Zika was a painful nuisance. For them, many of them under 20, it is a legal sentence that will follow them for the rest of their lives. Abortion in Brazil is illegal, and women can and do go to jail. Since visiting these young mothers, my life has changed dramatically. In the last 2 years, I've brought two Supreme Court cases in an attempt to protect women's reproductive rights since the Zika epidemic. One of the cases asks for the decriminalization of abortion during the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. The case is still pending, but the political impact was huge. I'm now under the Federal Protection Program for Human Rights Defenders at Risk. And for a while, it's not safe to go back to my country. It was the last time I stayed at home in Alagoas. Alessandra, on the suburbs of the city, has built a high wall around her house since our first visit. It reminds me of a bunker.
I met Eric and the two grandmothers. It was almost 2 years ago, and the baby was really a small baby, and they knew that the baby had some heart problem associated mm-hmm. with Zika.
Okay.
O Eric tem, ele tá dentro do grupo de Zika?
She's anxious when we arrive. Her grandson Eric has just been released after a long hospital stay. The boy is tired and restless and doesn't want anything to do with the strangers. Both grandmothers are here, and they tell me about the challenge faced by mothers, particularly those living in the interior. These women have been forgotten and neglected since May 2017, when the federal government declared the epidemic officially over. Their lives are marked by broken promises.
Posso sim. Vamos lá, que aí eu vou traduzindo devagar, assim, conversando com a Gabriela.
Brazilian culture makes plenty of room for children. It's not unusual for a stranger to give a baby a quick kiss, tussle a child's hair, or talk with the child like an old friend. But children with Zika don't inspire this type of affection. Instead, their mothers feel like their children are the objects of morbid curiosity.
And you now decided not to take care of the baby, afraid of the public discrimination, of going to the hospital, of taking bus, because her experience of going and people describing her baby as a frog. Is that, Gabriela?
Yes, it's a frog.
It's so dramatic, the way that people... Excuse me, I'm going in.
A minha duas irmãs, minha mãe e meu padrasto.
And who lives here? E quem mora aqui?
Eu e a Mirella.
This is what bothers Raquel the most. Raquel is the youngest of the mothers we meet. She got pregnant when she was 14.
Débora e Gabriela.
She avoids leaving the house, and she doesn't take her daughter to physical therapy because she doesn't want to feel questions on the bus.
Tudo bem?
Her daughter's case is actually a mild one, except that Zika left a hole where her left eye should be. Rachele lives just 5 kilometers from where my parents are spending their comfortable retirement. My parents' house has internet in a lovely garden. Down the road is the Landless Workers' Movement settlement, where Rachele lives. The only plant life is some old coconut trees. The windowless shack is divided in kitchen and bedroom. Instead of a bathroom, there is a bucket out back. Its contents are dumped into the sea periodically. Oh, so last year you had to change your place because of the floods. A recent flood has left mud everywhere. When the flood came, Rachele refused to leave because she was afraid her shack might be taken over by someone else. Stuck at home with her daughter, Rachele complains to us about the fine sand carried in by the sea breeze. It enters the hole in her daughter's face, causing an ongoing infection. Rachele isn't interested in school for her daughter, or physical therapy or medicine. She just wants a glass eye, so the girl's face will be normal. And they can go out without worrying that she will be seen as a mosquito child.
Do you use the mosquito net every day? Você usa o mosquiteiro todo dia?
Next, we visit Ana Carla, Paulo, and their son, Mikael, a baby whose case is so serious that he receives 24-hour home care. Ana Carla felt the symptoms of Zika early in her pregnancy. We always stop at this house last because the conversation here is never easy and never quick. The family used to live in another settlement belonging to the Landless Workers' Movement, where they had a small plot of land for planting crops, but no running water or electricity. When he was born, Mikael stayed alone at the hospital, and Ana Carla visited him when she could. It took nearly a year of battles with the state to secure government-funded home care and a house for the family. The house has 2 bedrooms, one for Mikael, his respirator, and the air conditioning running on maximum and a backup generator. Mikael can't be off the machines for even a minute. They have a nursing assistant 24/7.
Ana, quais são as recomendações mais? So I have to wash my hands and use the alcohol to clean my hands. So can I enter in? Posso falar com seu irmão? May I say hello to your brother? Oh, do you speak English?
The couple's other son, a 4-year-old, sleeps on the living room couch where he spends the day watching television. It's a tiny space for so much noise. The respirator, the evangelical sisters who come every afternoon to pray for a miracle, the television. And the asbestos roof makes it unbearably hot. Mikael has only ever been 2 places since his birth, the hospital and this house, refashioned in an intensive care unit financed by the state. The family wage a non-stop war against the mosquitoes. Water is rationed, so in order to have enough for their daily needs, they store it in buckets out back. Even though they know this makes a perfect breeding ground. When the day rolls round for public health agents to carry out mosquito inspections and check for standing water, everyone simply empties their buckets.
Eu acho que eu consigo imaginar, né, Ladson? Ela contou que...
We live in a Carla and Paulo's house, thinking about the 4 families. For these women, the Zika epidemic took hold and flourished in their impoverished houses. Until those inequalities no longer exist, these women's stories will be followed by many others. From where I'm living now, the prospect of a new presidency is bleak. For moving forward abortion rights and protecting the rights and health. Women living with Zika will not receive the care they want, need, and deserve.
Deborah Deneath. Contagious Cities is a cast iron radio production for the Wellcome Trust and BBC Radio 3. This is BBC Radio 3 After Dark. It's 11:05, and here's Nick Luscombe.
Hello, and welcome to Late Junction.